Good morning. It's come to order. Go on the record, please. I'm Charlotte Mitchell, Chair of the Utilities Commission. With me this morning are Commissioners Brown, Bland, Claude Felter, Duffley, McKissick, Hughes, and Kimmerite. I now call for hearing docket E7 sub 1263 in the matter of application of Duke Energy Carolinas LLC pursuant to North Carolina General Statute Section 62-133.2 and Commission Rule R855 relating to fuel and fuel-related charge adjustments for electric utilities. Section 62-133.2 provides for annual fuel charge adjustment proceedings for electric utilities engaged in the generation or production of electricity by fossil or nuclear fuels. Commission Rule R855 provides that the fuel charge adjustment proceeding for Duke Energy Carolinas will be held the first Tuesday of June of each year, and that DEC shall file its application, direct testimony, and exhibits, and shall publish notice prior to the hearing. On March 1st, 2022, DEC filed its application to adjust the fuel and fuel-related cost component of its electric rates, along with the direct testimony of witnesses Sykes, Houston, Verderami, Walsh, and Capps. The following parties have petitioned to and been allowed to intervene in this proceeding, including Carolina Utility Customers Association, Inc., or CUCA, the North Carolina Sustainable Energy Association, NCSEA, the Carolina Industrial Group for Fair Utility Rates 3, SIGFOR 3, and the Sierra Club. Public staff's participation in the proceeding is recognized pursuant to statute and rule. On March 14th, 2022, the Commission issued an order scheduling hearing requiring filing of testimony, establishing discovery guidelines, and requiring public notice. The order scheduled DEC's fuel hearing for today, Tuesday, June 7th, 2022, immediately following the hearing in docket number E7, sub 1262, which began at 10 o'clock this morning. On May 9th, DEC filed the supplemental testimony and exhibits of witness Sykes and the direct testimony of witness Johnson. On May 17th, 2022, the public staff filed the affidavit of Chu and the joint testimony of witnesses Lawrence and Metz. Also on May 17th, the Sierra Club filed the direct testimony and exhibits of witness Lander. On May 26th, DEC filed the rebuttal testimony of witness Verderame. On June 3rd, DEC and the public staff filed a joint motion for witnesses to be excused from this hearing. And then by order issued on June 6th, DEC witnesses Houston, Walsh, Capps, and Johnson, and public staff witness Chu and Sierra Club witness Lander were excused from attending the expert witness hearing, but DEC witnesses Sykes and Verderami and public staff witnesses Lawrence and Metz were not excused. All right, on June 3rd and on June 6th, DEC filed the required affidavits of publication in this docket. That brings us to this morning. Pursuant to State Government Ethics Act, I remind members of the Commission of our duty to avoid conflicts of interest and inquire at this time if any member of the Commission has a known conflict of interest with respect to the matters coming before us. The record will reflect that no conflicts have been identified, so we'll go ahead. I now call for appearances of counsel, beginning with the applicant.
Madam Chair, members of the Commission, Robert Kaler appearing on behalf of Duke Energy Carolinas.
Good morning, Mr. Kaler.
Good morning, Chair Mitchell. Again, LaDon Toon on behalf of Duke Energy Carolinas.
Good morning, Ms. Toon.
Good morning, Chair Mitchell and Commissioners. William Creech on behalf of the public staff and the using and consuming public. Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Creech.
Good morning, Chair Mitchell and members of the Commission. Christina Kress with the law firm of Bailey and Dixon appearing on behalf of Sigbert Reed.
Good morning, Ms. Kress.
Morning, Craig Schauer of the law firm Brooks Pierce here on behalf of Carolina Utility Customers Association.
Good morning, Ms. Schauer.
Good morning, Chair Mitchell, Commissioners. Taylor Jones on behalf of the North Carolina Sustainable Energy Association.
Good morning, Ms. Jones.
Good morning, Chair Mitchell, members of the Commission. Gudrun Thompson appearing on behalf of the Sierra Club.
Good morning, Ms. Thompson and Mr. Ledford. I see you back there. Are you making an appearance or are you letting your, yes, you're letting your, okay. Mr. Ledford is in. All right. All right. Before we move to the expert witness hearing, I will check in with the public staff to see if the public staff has identified any public witnesses who wish to be heard today.
We have not.
Okay. Looking out into the room, if there is a public witness that wishes to be heard today, please identify yourself. I am seeing no such public witnesses identify themselves. So we will now move into the expert witness hearing. Before we begin, any preliminary matters?
Nothing other than I guess it might be appropriate for me to go ahead and introduce into the record the testimony of our witnesses, Stephen Capps, Brian Walsh, Kevin Houston and David Johnson, since no parties had any cross of those witnesses.
All right. Mr. Let's start with the application first.
Yes.
And then we'll go from there. Okay.
The application, then for CAFS, the direct testimony consisted of 14 pages and one exhibit. For Walsh, direct testimony 11 pages. For Houston, 9 pages of direct testimony and 2 exhibits. And for Witness Johnson, I think it was just a couple of pages that happened from, but Witness Johnson also.
Okay. All right. Let me check and see if there are any objections to DEC's motion. All right. Hearing no objection, your motion's allowed.
Thank you. We'll proceed with the panel. Mr. Verderama, would you state your name, business address for the
record? Let me get him sworn in first.
Oh, sorry.
All right, gentlemen, raise right hands, left hand on the Bible. Do you affirm or do you swear the testimony you're about to give shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? So help you God.
I do.
All right, thank you.
State your name and business address for the record, please.
Excuse me, John Verderami, 526 South Church Street, Charlotte.
And by whom are you employed in what capacity?
Duke Energy Progress. I'm the vice president of the Fuels and Systems Optimization Group.
And did you cause to pre-filed direct testimony consisting of 11 pages and 3 exhibits?
I did.
And rebuttal testimony consisting of 11 pages?
I did.
And if I ask you the questions today, would the answers be the same?
They were.
Do you have any additions or corrections to that testimony?
I do not.
At this time, I would ask that the direct testimony and exhibits, the direct testimony be, and rebuttal testimony be admitted into the record and the exhibits identified for the record, please.
All right. Hearing no objection to the motion, testimony will be copied in the record as if delivered orally from the stand. The exhibits will be marked for identification purposes as they were when pre-filed.
And do you have a summary of your direct and rebuttal testimony?
I do.
Please proceed to give that to the commission.
Chair Mitchell, commissioners, good morning. Yeah. In my direct testimony, I described DEC's fossil fuel purchasing practices, provided actual fossil fuel costs for the period January 1, 2021 through December 31, 2021, test period, versus the period January 1, 2020 through December 31, 2020, the prior test period, and described changes projected for the billing period of September 1, 2022 through August 31, 2023, the billing period. No party to this proceeding has filed testimony recommending a disallowance of any costs incurred by DEC. In my rebuttal testimony, I respond to the testimony and recommendations offered by Mr. Gregory Lander on behalf of the Sierra Club. Witness Lander has not recommended any changes to the company's proposed fuel rates, and his testimony focuses on the recent volatility of natural gas prices. He suggests the company should utilize a physical hedge to mitigate natural gas price volatility by adding additional utility-scale renewable energy facilities, and he recommends certain changes to the company's forecasting practices. The company agrees that natural gas prices are volatile, and that is why the company practices both financial and physical hedging. For the review period, the company hedged nearly 50% of its actual natural gas volumes, resulting in a total savings of approximately $114 million. The content and structure of the company's application in this proceeding conforms with North Carolina General Statutes, North Carolina General Statute 62-133.2, C and D, and the Commission Rule R8-55, including the specific information required to be included in the fuel rider application under Rule R855E, and is substantially identical to that of all recent fuel rider applications. Furthermore, no party has alleged that the company's fuel application failed to conform to applicable law. The Commission has rejected similar recommendations from a Sierra Club witness in the 2 recent fuel proceedings and should, for the same reasons, reject the recommendation of the Sierra Club witness in this proceeding. Witness Lander's testimony indicates that the company should utilize a physical fuel hedge by building additional utility-scale renewable energy facilities. The company does not believe the fuel rider proceeding is the appropriate form for which to evaluate the inclusion of utility-scale wind and solar generation to the company generation. The company uses a phased hedging approach where financial hedges are executed over time for a percentage of the company's forecasted natural gas burns, with higher hedging targets in the first 12 to 24 months and lower hedging targets in the 36 to 60 month period. This multi-year rolling approach to executing fixed price transactions provides a reasonable and prudent approach to mitigate price volatility in uncertain fuel markets. In late 2020, the company extended its hedging program from 36 months to 60 months to mitigate customers' exposure to future upward pressure on U.S. market prices. During its review of the program in 2021, the company further increased the hedging target ranges for the periods of 25 to 60 months by additional 5% to decrease gas exposure and smooth the transition from one hedging period to another as the outer periods move closer to the prompt month. The company also engages in physical hedging by contracting for optional physical natural gas supply through monthly calls and daily optimization of its physical gas storage to reduce exposure to the Transco Zone 5 monthly and daily prices. The company has also increased its percentage of base load first of the month fixed price gas purchased to supply its combined cycle generation in order to mitigate the risk of daily gas price spikes. With respect to Witness Lander's recommendation and the company that the company incorporate periodic gas price spikes into its forecast fuel costs, the company has reviewed its forecasting process, including an evaluation of approaches similar to Witness Lander's recommendation, and determined such changes unwarranted. Only with the benefit of hindsight could inputs such as actual weather events, prices, and system cost impacts be known. Additionally, the forward natural gas market curves that are incorporated into the company's fuel forecasts are reflective of supply and demand dynamics and trends. In the company's view, incorporating historical high market price events and other speculative forecasting assumptions into the current forecasting process could arbitrarily increase forecasted costs billed to customers with the unwanted consequence of more consistent over-recoveries over the long term. Additionally, beginning in 2020, the company has incorporated the outputs of its fleet analytics stochastic model into its fuel planning, procurement, and hedging processes. The stochastic production cost model uses historical weather information to simulate numerous iterations or scenarios of future weather and load. This gives the company not only expected fuel burns, but also the probability associated with various ranges of fuel burns. The company continues to review additional opportunities to expand the use of stochastic production cost modeling and related outputs into its overall forecasting process to better calculate the range of costs that could occur throughout the forward period. The purpose of this proceeding is to establish fuel rates for DEC. Witness Lander has not recommended any changes to the fuel rates proposed by DEC, but instead has sought to leverage this proceeding into an opportunity to opine on a number of topics that are either properly addressed in other proceedings, some currently open, or have previously been rejected by the commission. This concludes my direct and rebuttal testimony summary.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Sykes, state your name and business address for the record, please.
My name is Brian L. Sykes, and my business address is 526 South Church Street in Charlotte, North Carolina.
And by whom are you employed in what capacity?
I'm employed by Duke Energy Carolinas as Director of Rates and Regulatory Filings.
In preparation for this hearing, did you have direct testimony consisting of 17 pages and six exhibits prepared?
Yes, I did.
And did you also prepare supplemental testimony consisting of 5 pages?
Yes, I did.
And I believe you had 4 revised exhibits to that supplemental testimony. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Do you have any changes or corrections to your direct or supplemental testimony?
Yes, I have 2 changes to my direct testimony. So on page 15 of my direct testimony, line 7, the first word states decrease. That should be replaced with increase. And on line 10, one of the last words is the EMF decrement rate. That should be replaced with EMF increment rate.
Thank you. At this time, Madam Chair, I would ask that Mr. Sykes's direct and supplemental testimony be introduced into the record as if given orally, and his 6 exhibits and 4 revised exhibits be identified as marked.
All right, hearing no objection to that motion, I'll allow it. The direct and supplemental testimony of the witness shall be copied into the record as if delivered orally from the stand. The exhibits shall be marked as they were for identification purposes as they were when pre-filed.
Thank you. Mr. Sykes, do you have a summary of your direct and supplemental testimony?
Yes, I do.
Please proceed.
Good morning, Chair Mitchell and members of the commission. The purpose of my testimony is to present the information and data required by North Carolina General Statute Section 62-133.2, C and D, and Commission Rule R8-55, as set forth in Sykes Exhibits 1 through 6, along with supporting work papers. The test period used in supplying this information and data is the 12 months ended December 31st, 2021, the test period, and the billing period is September 1st, 2022 through August 31st, 2023, the billing period. In my supplemental testimony, I present revised rates reflecting the impacts related to four updates to numbers presented in my direct exhibits. The primary update relates to incorporating the experience modification factor, EMF increment, the under-recovered fuel and fuel-related costs experienced during the month of January 2022. Following the incorporation of the update period, the North Carolina retail under-recovered balance as of January 31st, 2022 is approximately $327 million. This update has been reflected in my supplemental testimony and in the proposed rates conveyed in this summary. In addition, the supplemental testimony included the following updates. One, a revised final production plant allocation factor used to allocate renewable and purchase power capacity costs to the North Carolina retail jurisdiction. Two, the final 2021 coincidental peak data. And three, revisions to the retail customer growth and wholesale weather megawatt hour adjustments. The impact of all updates made in supplemental testimony was an increase to North Carolina retail total fuel costs of $81,819,379. This amount is primarily related to the incorporation of January 2022's under-recovered fuel and fuel-related costs of $81,987,600. Following these updates, the net proposed fuel and fuel-related cost factors by customer class are 2.4866 cents per kWh for residential customers, 2.4471 cents per kWh for general service customers, and 2.4122 cents per kWh for industrial customers. This concludes a summary of my testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Sykes. With the chair's permission, I do have a few additional direct questions for Mr. Sykes, and I did pass those out to the parties earlier in this meeting.
All right. Go, I'll let you go ahead, Mr. Kaler, and then I'll give the parties an opportunity to cross, should there be any.
Thank you. Mr. Sykes, why did the company make a supplemental fuel filing to increase its proposed rates in this proceeding?
So after reviewing the company's under-recovery for the period January 22 through March 22, the company discussed its appetite for making a supplemental fuel filing internally and initially decided not to make a supplemental fuel filing, leaving the proposed increase at 8.16%. Leading up to the deadline for intervener testimony, the company had several discussions with the public staff about the Q1 continued under-recoveries and the latest forecasted under-recoveries for the remainder of calendar year 2022. In an effort to avoid a larger, more significant under-recovery in the 2023 fuel proceeding, the company agreed to include an approximate $82 million under-recovery for January 22 only in the company's supplemental fuel filing. The inclusion of this under-recovery kept the total customer impact to less than 10% and kept fuel rates below the 2009 approved rates. 2008 was another year where we had significant fuel costs and fuel costs were volatile. There's never a good time to ask our customers to pay more for electricity needs. However, we are in somewhat unprecedented times with fuel price volatility, and informing customers of real-time rates is important today, particularly as the company expects fuel prices to remain at elevated levels during 2022 and possibly beyond. Ultimately, this commission has the final approval of the company's proposed rates.
So what customer impacts result from the company's proposed new rates?
Our residential customers using 1,000 kilowatt hours would see an approximate $10 increase per month. Smaller commercial customers would see an approximate $102 increase per month. Larger commercial customers would see an approximate $1,065 increase per month. And industrial customers would see an approximate $29,000 increase per month.
What are the costs associated with this supplemental fuel filing?
The company experienced an EMF or true-up component of $327 million. This represents approximately 72% of the ask for this proceeding. The remaining ask relates to an increased forecasted fuel cost of $130 million.
And what is the company expecting during the 2022 test period?
So the company submits monthly fuel reports to this commission, and based on the fuel reports that have been filed for January through April 2022, we are currently seeing an under recovery of $182 million. Based on the latest forecast data we have, we expect to see approximately $228 million in total calendar year 22 under recoveries.
We've heard talk of the company's hedging program. How did that benefit the customers during the year?
The company's hedging program during the 2021 test period realized savings of approximately $116 million on a system-wide basis. This translates into approximately $77 million of savings for our North Carolina retail customers. Additionally, as we are looking into the results for 2022, we have realized savings in January through April of 2022 of an additional $116 million, which translates into another $77 million for North Carolina retail customers. I'll note that fuel prices began spiking in spring of 2021, so the benefit in 2021 began increasing approximately May 2021. We are already seeing as much savings in 2022 since fuel prices continue to be significant and they are rising. It's a coincidence these numbers are the same.
What forecast did the company use in this proceeding?
The company used a forecast that began with fuel commodity prices as of the close of business December 9th, 2021. This was the forecast that was most recently available at the time of the fuel filing on March 1st, 2022. From the time a forecast close of business is set, it takes approximately 2 to 3 weeks to execute the forecast and another 2 weeks to determine customer rates. Subsequent to the company's direct filing, the company obtained another forecast as of the close of business March 10, 2022. This forecast showed an increase of 2.7% in total fuel costs. Leading up to the company's supplemental filing, we discussed this March 10th forecast and also looked at the underrecoveries through March 2022. In our supplemental filing, we elected to retain the December 9th forecast, but include the January 22 underrecovery of $82 million.
And so what are the costs associated with the supplemental fuel filing?
The company experienced an EMF or true-up component of $327 million. This represents approximately 72% of the ask in this proceeding. The remaining ask relates to increased forecasted fuel costs of $130 million.
And what is the company expecting during the 2022 test period?
Wait, there's an extra page in here. We just went through.
Yeah, I'm sorry, we just asked that. So that should complete the additional direct questions. Thank you.
All right. At this time, I'll check in with the parties to see if there's any cross-examination for the witness on the testimony, on this direct testimony just given. Breach? Okay. Any other party?
No questions, because I've just heard this testimony and so didn't know that it was going to be presented, but thank you for the opportunity.
All right. Understood. Thank you. All right, let me see if, let me check in with commissioners to see who has questions for the company's witnesses on any of the testimony filed in this docket. All right, I have a few questions. Commission has a few questions for you. Let me get organized here. Gentlemen, thank you both for being here this morning. I will take you through, I have a few questions, either or both may respond. So so you all have testified about the underrecovery at issue in this proceeding, and it's, I think you just testified it's at about 300 plus million. When the company realized the extent of the underrecovery, I'm assuming that probably happened sometime last summer. Did you all think about coming in sooner or taking any other action to address the underrecovery as opposed to waiting for it to continue to grow?
No, that's a great question. And I'm not an attorney, but in looking at the North Carolina fuel statute, there's not an opportunity to come in before the commission and seek some type of mid-course correction. So again, we do supply monthly fuel reports to the commission, and the public can access those reports. So folks can see the growing under recovery, but no, there was not an opportunity to come before the commission to seek some type of mid-course correction.
So the public staff, we were aware of the growing under recovery, and this is the first point in time at which the company could address that under recovery.
In my opinion, yes.
Yeah. Anything, Mr. Verderami, to add? Okay. So there, the price of natural gas has continued to escalate over the course of the past, you know, over the test year period, as well as it continues to escalate. You know, we understand from your direct testimony, Mr. Verderami, that the forward price for the billing period was $3.60. And public staff witnesses testified that as of May of 2022, this spring, it's been around 6.5 cents, and we know it's probably higher right now as we speak. You've testified about the under recovery that exists right now for the 2020, I guess it will be the next fuel rider proceeding, and that it's growing. And you've also given us in your testimony today sort of your best guess at where you think that under recovery will be when it is time for you all to come in. But is that, you know, how confident are you in that opinion or in that testimony, given that the price of gas is higher now than it was, you know, obviously in December when you all were preparing the filings for this proceeding, and it continues to escalate?
Sorry. Yeah, I can start, Chair Mitchell. Thank you.
Sure.
Better. So when I used to work on Wall Street, we had an expression, if you showed me tomorrow's newspaper, you'd only see me tomorrow. So unfortunately, the forward curve is our window into the future. And so the level of confidence I have is solely based on that forward look. But I will say, if you've read one article on the drivers behind gas, you've probably read them all. Lack of production response to the price, concern about storage and how that will impact. And I think that's important, how that'll impact future years. And then just demand domestically and internationally. But what you don't read, I think, is what's somewhat broken in the normal price response to natural gas. And this leads up to why I think we're going to see volatility going forward. The normal response to price, high prices, is either production response or demand destruction. So we've talked about the production response. I think the forward curve is giving some hesitancy to producers to go out and put more holes in the ground. They've also feeling pressure from their long-suffering investors to return cash to them. So I think it will take some time for production to return. But on the demand destruction side, that's usually where we see coal to gas to coal switching, right? And there's a whole nother discussion around the drivers behind coal. But effectively, there is very limited ability for generation to switch from gas to coal at this point. So that's there's a limit to demand destruction. The second demand destruction usually comes from utility use, or industrial use. And even at $7-$8 gas, these industrial users are fairly competitive against international users of gas that are $20 or $30 a dekatherm. So that's not slowing down demand either. And then finally, oil. The last demand destruction comes from switching from gas to oil. And at oil, the current conflict in Ukraine is driving oil prices at $125 a barrel. That inflection point is now $30 a barrel, or $30 a dekatherm. So the answer to your question is that there's really not a lot of confidence here, I think, because there's not a lot of stuff to slow down gas where we are right here. And I think that drives us to the short-term the short-term influences on gas, which will be this summer upcoming, and how we refill storage heading into the next winter period.
All right, thank you for that testimony, and just to follow up with you a bit there, Mr. Verderami, in your material, in your testimonies filed in this proceeding, you indicate that the company plans to increase gas burn in the coming year and reduce coal burn. Some of that is as a result of the, you know, several units coming offline. You noted that Allen had come offline. You note that there are planned retirements this year. And so, you know, with all of that in mind, how I want, and I hear you saying that your the numbers you are putting before us in this proceeding are subject to all of the external forces over which we have no control. The company has no control. The company does have control over how it procures fuel and operates its system. So assure me that the company is going to do everything it can to insulate its customers from the volatility that we are experiencing now and are likely going to experience as we move forward.
So I will start off with, I think of all the jurisdictions that I'm responsible for, the Carolinas have managed through this fuel crisis better than all the others. And I think it's a testament to two things. One, that the portfolio of assets we have and the diversity of those assets to switch between fuels when that's economically viable. And the other is, I think it's the commissions should be lauded for their commitment to the hedging program. It's a mature and it provides value to customers. Now, with that said, at the end of the day, we are a price taker. We can hedge to the limits of our hedge programs, but at the end of the day, we are somewhat subject to the vagaries of the market. We are very focused on fuel security, and as the coal supply chain devolves, that will be at least as much a priority for us as managing low cost, the cost of fuel in the short term. So I think in the long term, that really will be the goal for us, is to manage long term prices, and that as the as we see more stress on the coal industry, that's going to be our focus.
So you mentioned challenges that will arise this summer, as we increase usage down here as it gets hotter and hotter and air conditioners are cranking. But you also mentioned storage constraints. But talk to me some about the winter. As we head into the winter, what's going to happen? I mean, in jurisdictions jurisdictions across the country right now are expressing grave concerns about electric system operation as we head into the winter. So tell me what you're seeing for our systems here in terms of fuel prices, your ability to procure fuel, your ability to ensure fuel security. And then, your colleagues' ability to operate the system efficiently.
It's a great question, and I think it touched on a lot of things beyond just price. We're focused on the impacts, and have spent a fair amount of time looking into the impacts of crises, or like what happened in Texas, right? So there's a physical component to this, right? So we manage that with our physical and our financial hedging program. We're very aware of the burns in the winter, and we prepare, and that's really a big focus for us, because that's the winter time is where it becomes more difficult to secure additional natural gas. So as part of our plan for that season, we put together a program using our stochastic modeling that not only gives us what we expect the burn to be, but also where the burn could come if we have an exceptional event.
Okay. Has you touch on this some in your testimony, but I just want to follow up with you today. Has the company adapted its natural gas forecasts and projections at all in light of the volatility we're experiencing right now and are likely going to continue to experience?
Yes, Chair Mitchell, absolutely. And I probably should have spent more time on that. That stochastic modeling. The purpose of that is to really try and encompass some of the volatility into the fuel forecast and procurement strategies. And over the last 2 years or so, we've been developing out that that capability. We use it now for fuel procurement and for planning. We have not used it in rates yet, just because it's, you know, the impact of setting that fuel rate is significant, and we really just want to be thoughtful and make sure that that if we switch from a deterministic point in time model, which we use now, which obviously the flaws of which can be things change from today to tomorrow. We haven't quite worked out exactly how we integrate the power of stochastics into the fuel forecast in terms of rates, but that's something we'll be working on shortly here with staff.
Okay. So in your testimony touches on, and I mentioned this a minute ago, the projected increase in natural gas burn. Talk a little bit about how much what you all experienced during the test period was influenced by COVID and potential rebound from COVID. And are we sort of recovering from situations that occurred during COVID, or are we going to see that in the next fuel proceeding?
So moving back to the forward curve,
and I recognize that's not a very clear question.
No, just... I'll try, and okay. If I didn't get it.
Okay.
So there definitely clearly been impacts to both gas. The gas market on the production side and the coal market as well. Coal exacerbated by global events. From a production perspective, natural gas production has not returned to the point where it was pre-pandemic.
And what about usage on the company's system? That's really what I'm focused on.
So usage on a company system is that's a function of economics and availability. That's a little bit lost in this testimony of the timing of the first surge in energy prices came in the gas market as we recovered from the pandemic, and then that manifests itself into a run on coal, and so as you have different relationships between gas and coal, that usage will change, and I think that's reflected in the in the forward position and the forward curve. That's the best we see now. I think there is some risk that these prices stay higher, and we don't see the technical term as backwardation of the forward curve showing lower prices than the current spot market. There is limited to no ability, no what we call elasticity of supply in the coal market. There's no more coal to be bought. So that's going to naturally impact the economics of what runs.
I'll add as well that the company saw an increase of a little over 4% in this test period from the prior year. If that helps Duke Energy Carolina's North Carolina retail jurisdiction at a 4% increase in sales.
I will say we see some balancing in the commodity markets going forward. And that's why we see you'll see less coal burn going forward, because the forward market indicates that gas prices will be lower, gas will be more economic. You see that most dramatically at the dual fuel units. That's where the switch mostly occurs.
Okay. Mr. Verderami, a couple of questions for you about the hedging the company's hedging practices and program. So you, in recent years, the company has extended its hedge horizons from 36 months to 60 months and from, I think, 25 months to 60 months in another instance. What help us understand the benefits? Help us understand the decision to extend the hedge horizon.
Sure, Chairman Mitchell. So that first move to extend from 36 months to 60 months was really born out of what we saw as a no regrets move in response to a really extended period of low gas prices and a forward curve that was very flat that showed there was not a lot of premium to the forward market. And customers almost had a, again, no regrets opportunity to start layering in some hedges out further out the curve. So that was that decision. And then further to that, as we started to see a growth in gas, an expectation there would be more gas burned, that it made sense to raise some of those percentages up just a little bit as well. It's still a very programmatic, or fairly programmatic type of a program, but it allows those longer terms allow us to layer in hedges through time.
Okay, it's my understanding that Piedmont Natural Gas, obviously DEC's affiliate, hedges out 12 months. Is that, are you aware of Piedmont's practices?
No, I'm sorry, I'm not.
Okay, could if that is the case and you were to accept that, subject to check, any reason why, can you think of any reason why Piedmont would hedge out only 12 months?
I'm sorry, I can't.
Okay. All right, a couple of questions from the staff of the commission. Page 5 of your direct testimony, you state that the average price of the gas purchased for the test period was $4.22. Do I get that right? Is that right?
That sounds right, yeah.
Okay, I'm looking at page 5 of your direct. Did you prepare an exhibit that shows how you all calculated the average price?
Yes, there is. I don't know if there's an exhibit for it. It might have been in the data request.
Okay. And just a follow-up there, is there an exhibit in your testimony, in any of your testimonies filed, that breaks down the components of the cost of gas?
No, Chair. No.
Okay. I'd ask that you all file as a late filed exhibit, such an exhibit, show how the average price was calculated, and that average price is $4.22, which appears on page 5 of his direct testimony. And then if you can, in that exhibit or alongside that exhibit, break down the components of the cost of gas for us.
We can do that.
Gas, transportation, demand, storage, et cetera.
And the hedges are in that price okay. as well. It's all in cost. Sure, we can provide.
Perfect. Thank you. All right. You've talked some about the benefits to the customers in recent months of the hedging program. And I think you indicated approximately $114 million for purposes of this proceeding. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. Help us understand how that $114 million benefit to customers splits between financial and physical hedges. Do you know that information?
I would say those are all financial gains.
All financial. And so is there a way to monetize or quantify the benefit of physical hedges? Benefit or cost to customers?
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure. Okay. I think we probably can break that down. We can certainly look into it.
Okay. And just for my edification, talk some about a physical hedge. What are the types of physical hedges in which the company engages?
Yeah, so those are all part of how we, I'll say, set up the season or the system on a daily, even or on a seasonal basis. We stack up physical purchases, delivered supply purchases, and then on top of that, there are other optional, I mentioned in my testimony, optional instruments where we can define a fixed price of gas at some point in time. Some of them are monthly as we head into the month. Others are predetermined. So that would be more the physical. We'd have to go back and and look at when we struck on the physical options, you know, how they realized against the spot price.
And are the physical hedges, are those transactions that occur with Transco pursuant to the terms of your supply agreements with Transco, or are those done on sort of open market?
No, those are done on the open market. We don't buy any supply from Transco. They're only the transportation provider.
Okay, got it. Okay. And at this point in time, am I correct that the company is not filing a monthly hedging report with the commission?
No, we do not. That's correct. We do not.
Okay.
We file a quarterly.
Yeah, I believe we file some periodic report with public staff on a monthly or quarterly basis detailing several months worth of the hedging gains or losses.
Okay. Okay. All right. I will pause here to see if there are any other questions from commissioners. All right. Questions on commission's questions.
Thank you, Chair Mitchell. Seat Creature again with the public staff. Witness Vitarame, if you can, obviously a lot of extensive questions just then. One I wanted to ask you about related to what y'all see for this year. And you indicate in the comments that you spoke a little while ago that based on January through April 2022 fuel reports, we're seeing an under recovery of $182 million already. And then you say based on the latest forecast data we have, we expect to see approximately $228 million in total calendar 2022 under recoveries. And so you may have touched on this, but if you can just explain why that is. Obviously, we're all very interested in pricing hedging. Go ahead.
So I'll do the fundamental part, and witness Sykes can back me up on the actual numbers. So you picked an interesting day for a hearing. Yesterday, the balance of the year natural gas price traded over $9 for the first time. So we see, I'll just, the last 5 years have averaged below $3. The next 5 years average probably $5.50. But clearly in this next year or two, there are going to be volatility and high prices. So we expect the balance of 2022 natural gas to, at this point, trade above $9 a decatherm. And 2023, currently trading about $6. So you can see there's a kind of a cliff till we get to some normalcy out in 24, 25, and 26, where we're getting closer to, you know, closer to historical prices around $4 or $4.50. So not a return to $3 immediately here in the near future, or on the coal side as well. Coal remain fairly elevated. It's extremely scarce right now. So we've come to the point where we are competing for the marginal ton of coal with Europe and China. And so that will continue to be a struggle until that resolves itself. I will say, in terms of what hits rates, gas hits immediately because we don't have any storage, while coal, while these high prices set the dispatch price, the actual price the customers pay for the coal is not until it's actually burned. So you see a kind of discrepancy, a little bit of discrepancy.
Yeah, and I would just add to that, you know, this is based off of a March forecast. So to the extent underlying commodity prices change, we could expect to see a different outcome in the total under recovery for the balance of the year. I would also add that new rates, if approved by the commission, the proposed rates that we have in front of you today, go into effect September 1st. So there's not a lot of time in the balance of 22 to make up for any significant underlying commodity prices.
No questions.
Chair Mitchell, a few questions, please.
Go ahead.
Craig Schauer with CUCA. So Mr. Vitarame, if I recall your testimony just recently, I believe you said you would expect prices to potentially return to the $4 range somewhere in the time period of 2024 to 26. Earlier, you gave us a very detailed list of the drivers of the cost of natural gas, the price of natural gas. How do you, what drivers do you anticipate shifting that will allow the price to finally subside back to $4?
So I think the primary one is going to be a return to some production. Again, if producers see some price sustainability out the curve, that will incent some, that should incent some production, and that will balance out the market. And there's, again, there's always some impact from the demand side as well. If there's a potential, any potential economic disruption as well could balance that out.
So just to recap, it sounds like the primary driver would be a return to production. Okay, thank you.
I believe so, yeah.
No further questions.
No questions, I'll redirect.
Okay, gentlemen, I actually have one more question for you. So we'll have to go through this again. Sorry, guys. The extent of the increase that the company is asking the commission to approve in this case, just considering the average residential user is just under 10%, is that right? Given the updated numbers?
That's correct.
Okay, are you all aware of the extent of the increase that the commission approved in the company's last general rate case?
I don't have the numbers in front of me. It was approximately a 1.34% decrease, I believe.
Well, it was impacted by the EDIT riders, as you're aware. The company is returning EDIT through riders that phase out over time. So that has rounded the edges out for customers who are experiencing those rate increases. I'm looking at the customer notice right now, and when that, upon the expiration of EDIT Rider 4, which happens 5 years out from the commission's order in that rate case that was tried in sub-1214, the increase to customers, the residential customer, would be $8.45 per month. So in this proceeding alone, customers are going to experience $10 a month for the next year. So I just, does that sound right to you all? Is that squaring with what you're telling us today, is that customers are going to have a pretty significant shock once these rates go into effect?
Yes, that is correct, based off of everything that we're seeing today.
Okay, and Mr. Verderami, I've asked you this already, but I understand your testimony today to be that you all are going to do everything you can to insulate customers from the volatility that is happening in the markets right now.
Yes, Chair. Again, we're somewhat subject to the vagaries of the market, but outside of that, we're also, you know, very focused on other ways that we can reduce customers' costs
and manage this risk. And I want you to be sure, and I interrupted you, so I'll let you proceed, but I just want to hear that you all are actively engaged in managing this risk.
It is very front of mind for us.
Okay. All right. Any questions on my question? Let's see. Over on this side, Mr. Creech. Ms. Thompson.
Last question. Sorry about that. Mr. Verderami, Goodrin Thompson, representing the Sierra Club. In response to Chair Mitchell's last question about, you know, providing assurance that the company is going to do all it can to mitigate the risk of fuel price volatility to its customers, understand that the company doesn't control the gas markets, correct?
Correct.
And I think earlier, or you had alluded to being able to control the operations of your system. Is it correct that the company can control the way it operates its system?
Yes.
And isn't it also true that the company can control what resources it seeks to add to its system and the resources for which it seeks commission approval?
Subject to commission approval, but yeah.
Correct. And isn't it also true that, or are you aware that the proposed carbon plan recently filed by the company and Duke Energy Progress includes over 2 gigawatts of new gas combined cycle capacity in each of the 4 proposed portfolios?
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
That's all I have. Thank you, Chair Mitchell.
All right, Mr. Kaler.
No questions.
Okay. All right. With that, gentlemen, you all may step down. Mr. Kaler, I'll take a motion.
Yes, I would move that the exhibits, which has previously been marked for the record, be accepted in evidence.
All right. Hearing no objection, we will allow, we will accept the exhibits into evidence.
And I believe I also moved the application already.
You did. We got the application. Gentlemen, thank you for your testimony today. Y'all may step down.
And that concludes our case.
All right. With that, I'm not hearing anything from counsel. Well, actually, Mr. Creech. Go ahead.
If you'd like for us to call witnesses, Lawrence and Metz, we can.
Let's do that. And let's also move Ms. Chu's affidavit in.
Certainly. Public staff would ask that that witness Chu's affidavit be entered into the record.
All right. Hearing no objection, that motion will be allowed.
Thank you. So we're calling witnesses Lawrence and Metz, and parties, to my knowledge, we filed, did not have cross, so without objection, we'll have them appear as a panel.
No objection.
Okay. May proceed.
Mr. Lawrence.
Let's get them sworn in. Guys, right hands up, left hand, Bible. Swear a testimony about to give shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So help you God. All right. All right, Mr. Creech.
All right, we'll start with Mr. Lawrence. Mr. Lawrence, will you please state your name, business address, and present position for the record?
My name is Evan Lawrence. My business address is 430 North Salisbury Street, Raleigh, NC, and my current position is a utilities engineer with the Public Staff's Energy Division.
All right, Mr. Metz, if you'll do the same, please state your name, business address, and present position for the record.
My name is Dustin Metz. Business address is 430 North Salisbury Street, Raleigh, North Carolina. I'm an engineer with the Operations and Planning Division with the Public Staff.
Right. And Mr. Lawrence, on May 17, 2022, did you and Mr. Metz jointly prepare and cause to be filed in this docket joint testimony consisting of 16 pages inclusive of two appendices, attached to which there were three exhibits, being Lawrence Metz exhibits 1 to 3?
Yes.
And is that right, Mr. Metz?
That is correct.
And Mr. Lawrence, do you have any corrections to your testimony?
No, it's time, no.
Mr. Metz?
None of this time.
Mr. Lawrence, if you were asked the same questions from your testimony today, would your answers be the same?
Yes.
Mr. Metz?
They would be the same.
Chair Mitchell, I move that the joint testimony consisting of 16 pages, inclusive of their two appendices, be copied into the record as if given orally from the stand.
All right. Hearing no objection to that motion will be allowed.
And Chair Mitchell, the witnesses are available for commission questions.
All right. Good morning, gentlemen. Let me check in with colleagues to see if anyone has questions for you all. All right. I've got a few for you. All right. Supplemental testimony and updated numbers. Have you all, public staff, had a chance to review that additional information?
We have reviewed the numbers and how they flow through. We haven't reviewed yet for appropriateness and prudence. That will be done in the next fuel case.
All right. Any objections or concerns with what has been filed as supplemental information in this docket?
No.
Okay. You heard my questions for company witnesses about volatility and insulating customers during this period of time when we anticipate that there will be volatility in the natural gas market and you know the continued closure of the coal facilities and the reality of the coal market right now. Is there anything else that you all believe the company could be or should be doing to insulate customers from this risk, these risks?
So during the conversation, I believe there was a few components talked about. There is the fuel cost risk, but there's also what we call a fuel security risk. So not to ask the chair a question or you highlighting the fuel security standpoint or more the cost element?
All of the above. I mean, recognizing that certain external forces are beyond the company's control. What I'm focused on is what can the company do right now to manage the volatility to manage this risk that the volatility imposes on customers. And if the answer is nothing more than what they've testified, that's fine. I just want to make sure there's nothing else that you all can think of or have discussed that we should be aware of.
There's no additional items that we have discussed other than what's been presented today.
Okay. Y'all, in your testimony, you note the disparity between the gas price the company was using and the gas price. I think your testimony identified gas price in March. What discussions did the public staff have about utilizing sort of more recent forecasts than that which they utilized?
So the new witnesses stated earlier sort of the overall timeline of what it takes to get a fuel filing ready. And in my words, pencil downs are about to end this December, and it takes a few weeks to complete everything, then make the filing. We were having internal conversations, and when Duke made the filing, we also reached out and had multiple meetings with Duke saying, okay, these are your projections. And we were both very cognizant, sensitive of the actual rate increases in this case. And what were the projections? And just using round numbers here, I believe when we started the conversation potentially in March, looking at the NYMEX natural gas price around $6 to $7 range, with looking at those forward curves, there's the potential that they can go up. And it's potential they can go down. I believe Mr. Lawrence covered this in his testimony, and similar to conversations we had in the Dominion fuel filing at the end of last year, internal conversations on DEP fuel filing when we started noticing this trend. So when we looked in March, there was no immediate expectation that the gas prices would be approximately $9.50 as of yesterday. So as more time passes, one has more clarity into what the actual exposed volatility is.
And I will add that we had similar discussions in the fall with Dominion Energy when they had filed for their fuel case. And there were concerns at that time about updating essentially the filing, the whole filing, later in the discovery period, test period, and then at what point is too late. Normally, we don't see these types of price changes between the time the case is filed and shortly after, even as we saw this time, but until the hearing. This is an historically unusual situation. I don't know how unusual it's going to be moving forward. And that is something, when to update and if to update, is something that we have discussed in this and Dominion's fuel case in 2021. Those discussions are going to be ongoing to ensure that we get something that's fair for everybody at appropriate rates and for the customers.
Just again to reiterate, an item prevalent to this case was the overall magnitude in weighting the potential outcomes of saying, here's the potential increase, and if you were to update to most current projection prices, the cost impact to ratepayers have been well north of 10%.
All right. Bleak outlook. Any concerns with the company's hedging practices? Anything in response to the testimony Mr. Verderami gave, or anything that the commission should be aware of related to companies' hedging programs?
No additional information to add on to Duke witness.
Okay.
I have nothing.
Okay. All right. Commissioners, anybody else? All right. Questions on commission's questions?
No questions.
Go ahead. Anybody on the side? All right. All right. With that, gentlemen, y'all may step down. Anything else? Any other motions from public staff?
Chair Mitchell would want to move Lawrence Metz exhibits 1 to 3 into evidence, that they be numbered for identification as pre-marked in the filing.
All right. Motion's allowed. Mr. Kaler, my recollection is you've got confidential testimony in this proceeding, confidential information in one of the exhibits. Is that?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yes.
I just ask that you all make sure that that confidential information is so indicated in the transcript.
Yes.
Ms. Thompson?
Yes, Chair Mitchell, just before you adjourn, just out of an abundance of caution, if I may make a motion with regard to our witnesses.
Please do. Please do.
I would move that Gregory M. Lander's testimony consisting of some 22 pages, which was filed in both confidential and public versions, be copied into the record as they're given orally from the stand, and that the confidential version remain under seal, and that Mr. Lander's two exhibits also be admitted into evidence.
All right. Hearing no objection, Ms. Thompson's motion is allowed. All right. With that, we are concluded with the expert witness hearing. We will take proposed orders, 30 days of the notice of the mailing of transcript. Anything else, counsel?
Thank you.
All right. Thank you all. We are adjourned. Let's go off the record, please.